Okay, should be with Hatzlocha. Heyeim pifi yishluche amcha beis Yisrael. Okay, so no problem. So we're on Perek Lamed Beis here in the Gvuras Hashem. Ooh, shalom aleichem, welcome back. We're on Perek Lamed Beis, the 32nd chapter of the Gvuras Hashem, and where we're up to is Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron appearing in front of Paroi Melech Mitzrayim. Okay, we're in Parshas Va'era. We were learning two weeks ago, about the Yichus of Moshe Rabbeinu and the hardening of Paro's heart, which was predicted. But now Paro has Moshe and Aaron come in front of him, and the first thing which they do is they do a Moifes. As the Pasuk says, let's pull out the Chumash here. And we see as he appears in front of them, the pasuk says, "Vayemar Hashem Moshe Aaron leimor ki daber alachem paray leimor." When Paray speaks to you, saying, "Tenu lachem my face, give a sign." The amarta el Aaron, and you'll say to Aaron, "Kaches matchov ashlech lifnei paray hilasanin." Take your stick, your staff. Throw it, cast it down in front of Paro, and it will be a sanin, it will be a snake. So Moshe and Aaron came to Paro, and they did this, and Aaron cast down his staff before Paro, v'fnei avodav, v'yihil sanin, and it became a snake. And as you know, so the Paro's did, his sorcerers did the same thing, and then the stick of Aaron swallowed up theirs, and Paro hardened his heart. Leishom aleim kasher diber Hashem. Now, so the first thing which the Maral here deals with is the significance of this maifes, of this sign of the stick turning into a staff. The staff turning into a snake, excuse me. What's the significance of this maifes, of this sign which is being performed by Aaron in front of Paro? And Maral says something here, and you may recall, and we'll review what he said as well before in Perek Chav Zayin, something beautiful, magnificent he said before in Perek Chav Zayin. The problem which he's dealing with, both here and there, first off, is that when Moshe Rabbeinu went in front of the Jewish people to do a sign, what did he do? He actually did three signs. He did the sign of the staff, he stuck his hand in and it became leprous, and he brought it out and then healed it. And he also did a third thing, which was that he spilled some water on the ground and it turned into blood. Here, he just does the one sign here. Later, of course, as you know, Moshe Rabbeinu is going to do, right away it says then he starts with the makos. But in terms of demonstration, here he does one before he did three. So the Maral says, it's poshut, it's simple. Over there, Moshe Rabbeinu was doing it because he said, they're not going to believe me. And so he needed something in order to create belief in the hearts of the Jewish people. And it was going to be a successful mission to create beliefs in the hearts of the Jewish people. And so, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him these signs. If they don't believe the first one, they'll believe the second one. If they don't believe the second one, they'll believe the third one. However, in the case of Paro, this in a certain sense was an exercise in futility. Moshe Rabbeinu had been told to begin with that there was going to be this Hakosha slave Paro. He's not going to believe so readily. And there was going to have to be a whole process of the Makos until Makos Bechoros in order to get Paro to come around. So therefore, look, Paro asked for a Moifes. He asked for a proof. You asked for it, you got it. Right? Paro says, Tenu lachem maifes, and you got to give him a maifes. Right? Something to demonstrate. The pasuk never says that Paro actually asked for it. It says, when Paro will ask you, Tenu lachem maifes, this is what you should do. And then the pasuk goes on and says, and they came before Paro and they did it. But as the Ramban teaches, that's the way it works. Psukim don't always articulate every step back and forth. It goes without saying that if Hashem said, when he asks you, this is what you should do, and then it says that he did it, that Paro asked. So you have to respond to his request, but to do it multiple times, he didn't ask for Maifsim. Before, by Klal Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to cement the deal. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him numerous signs which would indeed cement the deal. That's what the Maral says, says over here. Now, the Maral said earlier something magnificent, which he doesn't, for some reason, I don't even know why, he doesn't even reference it here, but he said before something earlier in Perkov Zion, which was great. He said that the way Yitzias Mitzrayim worked was in three stages. The first stage was to frighten them. The second stage was to give them plagues. And the third stage was to destroy them. And so he says that's why when HaKadosh Baruch was showing the Bnei Yisrael through the signs through Moshe Rabbeinu, he did these three. Because the first step was to frighten them, La'ayim Aleihem. And when the snake came out, remember, Moshe Rabbeinu got all nervous. And HaKadosh Baruch was all, no, come, grab its tail. But it frightened. The second was Tzaras. Tzaras is called a nega, a plague. Right? Like the Negoim, like the plagues, like the Makos. And the third, he said, was blood. The idea is, because blood, of course, is the spilling of blood, is life itself, is destruction. Which after the Makos, which wounded the Egyptians, there would be Kriyas Yamsuf, which destroyed the Egyptians. Or Makos Bechairis, whatever, however you wanna see it. So it was those three stages that he was foretelling for the Jewish people about how Yitzias Mitzrayim would work. Here, where it's actually being carried out with Paro, so first you have the Mephis, the sign which is supposed to scare Paro, the snake, and the snake swallowing up the snakes of the others. Then, as it plays out, then we'll have the Makos, which is a playing out of the Tzaraz, and then we're going to have Kriyas Yamsuf, which is a playing out of the Hayul Adam Be'Yabashas. That was the Chiddush of the Maral, which he said before. I think it's very elegant in explaining why here, what happened there, the stick, was actually in anticipation of the stick here. What happened there, the Tzaraz, was for what would come next. So there's nothing really missing here in the story. That's what the Maral says there, but here again he says differently. And it happens often in the Maral. But within the Sefer, he will usually make reference. I don't know over here why he doesn't make reference. Now, however, the next phase of the Maral is discussing why it is specifically this sign of the Nachash, of the stick becoming a snake, that is used here in the story. And the Maral cites two midrashim, which are going to form the backbone of this of his explanation of this idea. Why is it? And he says, first of all, there's a medrash, which is earlier in Sefer Shmais, where it says that the thing is that the Nachash, when you think of this snake, what other snake do you think of? You think, of course, of the original snake. And the original snake, says the Medrash, was niskalel be'eser klolos, was cursed with 10 curses. The Torah said to the Kadosh Baruch Hu said to the Nachash, Ki asisa zeis, because this orat mikol abheima umikol chayas hasada al duchen chatelech, ve'ofor toichal kol yimei chayecha, ve'eva oshis bein cho ve'in o'isha, uvein zaracho, uvein zara, hu yishuv choresh, ve'atot yishuvenu akev. So you have to look at the Medrash, you have to figure out how that divides into 10 curses. But the Medrash says that the Nachash had 10 curses. And the Maral says, it makes sense, because the Gemara in Erevin says that Chava got 10 klolos. And Chava was second in the stage of guilt from the snake. So therefore, as a remez to the fact that Paro was going to get 10 makos, so he gave him the sign of the Nachash of the snake, who also got 10 makos. That's what the Medrash says. And the Maral doesn't really darshan on that Medrash, he doesn't expand on it, he just cites it. But then he brings another Medrash, which is found closer to where we are here, and the Medrash says that as follows. Kach es matcha, take your staff. Ein reida kodesh baruch hu es harishoyim ela b'mata. Hashem punishes the Rishoyim with a staff. V'lama, why? V'ishanim shu'ulu kelev. Because they are compared to a dog. As it says, Yashuvul erev yamuk ha'kelev, pasuk in Tehillim. And we say, the same way you hit a dog with a stick, k'shem shedarkai shel kelev ha'kaisei b'mata, it is normal to hit a dog with a stick. Kach im yemer lechem tunu lechem maifes, if Paro asks you for a sign, Hake oisai v'make, hit him with a stick. Okay? That's line number one of the Medrash. Line number two of the Medrash is Yehila Sanin, and it'll turn into a snake. Why? Because just like a snake hisses, is malachesh, it whispers and kills, so too the king as well. Right? There's a prisoner in jail, the king whispers, right, off of his head, and he's dead. Just like a snake, everybody gets out of the way of the snake. Right? Ma'kemes d'rocheho. It's interesting language. I'm just telling you the way the Maral translates it. The snake, everybody's scared, everybody backs off in deference to the snake. So too the same is true of the king. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Omar HaKadosh Baruch Meisha Parim Ukam Kshaboli Hisakem Omar El Aron V'yitles Hamate Kenegdai. He says, tell Aaron to take the stick and hold it opposite him. And tell him, Mizeat Aloike, from this you will be afflicted. And then, finally the Medrash says, and again I'm just telling you the Medrash as the Maral does, and then we'll look at to analyze it a little bit more closely. He says, why the snake? Because Pare is compared to the snake. As it says, Hatanin HaGodol HaRevitz B'Seichi Arav, right, the great snake who crouches, who rests within his pools, within his lakes, who says, the pool is mine, v'ani asi sini. That was what Pare was compared to. And so, it says, when Moshe Rabbeinu left Pare, Pare said, if he's going to come back here, I'm going to kill him. Ani tzolva, ani tzorfar, I will crucify him, I will burn him. And when he came into Pare, Pare was like a stick. He couldn't do anything. You ever wonder why Pare didn't just kill Moshe Rabbeinu? And he was very annoying. Right? But he never did anything to Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? Rashi said, we discussed it earlier in the Gvuras, he was able to go and come at will. Shevet Levi wasn't nishtabek, he wasn't enslaved. Okay, so the conventional slavery didn't apply to them. But, you know, there wasn't something special to do, you know, to Moshe Rabbeinu for all of this. But Pare himself became like a stick. He was impotent when it came to dealing with Moshe Rabbeinu. So what is the Medrash saying over here in all of these elements and all of these comparisons? So the Maral says as follows. The first thing which he said was that you hit it with a stick like a dog. Now this Maral is not going with the shita that dog is man's best friend. This Maral is going with the shita which you find that the dog in a certain sense is very much meruchak. Hakol marchikim es hakelev. People stay away from the dogs. Right? The dog as the oppressor, right? The dog as used by our enemies in recent history, and hakol marchikim es hakelev. So he says that the stick was used against Paro as an act of utter disdain. The staff of Moshe Rabbeinu, with all of its mystical qualities and properties, after all is said and done, it was a stick. And Paro was being beaten back with a stick like a dog is beaten back with a stick. It was not a compliment to Paro. That's the first layer of the Medrash. And as Rashi says, as the Maral says, Ki Arasha Mipnei Rishasai Rochaich Min Hametzius. The Rasha, because of his evil nature, has made himself in a certain sense subhuman. And therefore he deserves to be hit, this Rasha Paro, with a stick, just like one would do it to the dog that the human being doesn't want to have something to do with. The same thing would happen over here. And then Maral gets more into this, and he speaks about the idea that it speaks about the comparison of Paro to the snake, and it says that he says what we have here is the malchus that kills easily, as we said, the snake whispers, the snake hisses and kills with just, so to speak, the word of its mouth. And the king had the same power. And the king had the power as well, again, of everybody getting out of the way of the king. Why? Not only is the king able to do death penalties, but there's a rule of melech peretz geder lasos leiderech. If a king wants to have a highway go through somebody's property, that's exactly what he does. He builds it that way. And he doesn't have to worry about compensation packages. Just the person says, I'm the king, get out of my way. And the person indeed has to get out of his way. And in this way, the king is daime le nachash. Just like everybody gets out of the way of the snake, so too everybody gets out of the way of the king. So he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, look, here's the snake, right? The king is compared to the snake. A Parai himself, again, was comparing himself to the Chazal compare Parai to the snake. He's Nimshal L'Tanin, right? I'm going to do this. So the thing is, says the Maral, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, we're going to make it into a stick. The snake represents power, like the king represents power. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes the stick into the snake, and then makes the snake back into the stick. The greatest vulnerability of a king is arrogance. The greatest vulnerability of a king is arrogance. The Torah, in one place, gives an instruction about being humble, and where is that? By a melech, right? The mitzvah that you might have, if you count it as a mitzvah, for a person not to be arrogant, levilti rum levavai, is said by a melech. Because power intoxicates. Power, when a person is given power, so they think that they have power. But what do we say about the power of kings? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mamlech melochim v'loy hamelucha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu empowers kings, and the king is all of his, is the kingdom is his. Afilu reish gargusnei. The Gemara says even the person in charge of distributing water amongst the fields, you know, in the regular agricultural cycle, is appointed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Leiv melochim v'sarim v'yad Hashem el kol asher yachvetz yatenu. The power, the heart of kings, the decision-making process of kings is in the hands of Hashem. He can direct it and redirect it in whichever way he pleases. That's the vulnerability of the king. The king should not become intoxicated with his power. The king should recognize the severe and serious limits of his power. Says the Maharal, that's the idea. A stick is powerless. A snake is frightening. A snake can kill. Everybody moves out of the way of the snake. The snake is the power of the king. But one minute it's a stick, the next minute it's a snake, and the next minute it's a stick again. Remember the story that's brought in Sefer Daniel about Nebuchadnezzar, Harosha, who one day went out and was intoxicated in with his power. And he said, I am so powerful. Look how HaKadosh Baruch Hu has charged me, has put me in charge over all of the kingdoms of the heaven and earth. That's what he said. And what happened? He lost his mind. HaKadosh Baruch Hu suddenly brought upon him insanity. He couldn't, he went and he lived out in the fields with the animals. His hair grew long, his nails grew long. He ate berries in the fields for a long time. Until, at a certain point, he looked up to the Shamayim. And he had a recognition of Hashem Yisbarach, and he got his head back. And he got his position back. Right? This is a story which Nebuchadnezzar himself told in Sefer Daniel. He told this to his kingdom, to his credit, recognizing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu reminded him that the power of the king is not his. The hardening of Paro's heart was not because Paro made a decision and he was a real tough guy and a stubborn guy and he says, I'm going to hold on to the Jewish people. The hardening of Paro's heart was because Paro was not a snake, because he was a stick, because he was powerless to defend himself, to protect himself. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that the simen, or the maifis, which I'm going to show to Paro, is I'm going to take a stick, I'm going to turn it into a snake, and I'm going to turn the snake back into a stick again. I'm going to take the stick and turn it into a snake. I will give it its power. And then I take away its power. Paro, you see yourself as powerful. In truth, your power is not your own. Your power is not real. In that sense, they became matos once again. That's the thing. Chen mashpil melochim u'menanochesh u'dayim u'melchay semata lachzor el shiflusay. That's the way the Maharal learns. He also says a second pshat, which he interestingly likes even more, and he says that the idea is because turning the stick into a snake is putting the mata, the makos, which would be symbolized by the mata, into the kingdom. The kingdom would be undermined and compromised by the makos. The Maharal says, "Pirzei Yoser Ikar." I don't know why the Maharal says that this second pirush is more basic, but I find the first pshat very, very riveting, very, very significant. Okay, so that's this thing. This was a lesson of the impotence that Paro would have, that he should not become intoxicated with his power over the Jewish people, and the little reminder of it, as we said, was that he was powerless against Moshe Rabbeinu. He wanted to destroy Moshe Rabbeinu every time that Moshe Rabbeinu came in. But he did not have the ability, ultimately, to be able to do so. Okay. Zehu. That's the Maharal's commentary on the story of the stick and the snake and the stick. Okay? Everybody okay with this? Questions, comments? Straightforward.
Where does that fit in with Haggadah?
What do you mean?
Don't they have the whole thing with the snake, but the dog with the sewing and the goes to stick?
Not exactly. That's a little bit of a different term. Okay. The makos begin. And the Maharal over here is not going to really have his exhaustive discussion of the makos. The Maharal discusses the makos a little bit here in the story. And the Maharal discusses the makos in a certain sense even more, much later in the Gvuras Hashem, in the commentary on the Haggadah section of the Gvuras Hashem, Perek Nun Vav, Perek Nun Zayin. He's going to reference it a little bit here, and we'll call upon it a little bit here. But here is the beginning of it, because again he's going through the Chumash as the story is being told. And the first makah was, as we know, the makah of dam. And the question is, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu choose that the first makah, the first plague that he should bring upon them, should be the makah of dam? So Rashi says, and this is Rashi in Parshas Shmos, right here, where it just goes on to the makah of dam. So Rashi says, "Haya Isa atzmei eleika v'aymer she'ini tzarech l'nakava v'mashkim yetzel nil tzvaisa shom tzrachav." He caught him as he was going out to the river, because Paro used to go out early in the morning to the river to take care of his personal needs, because Paro deified himself. He didn't want people to see his basic human needs, his vulnerability. So he caught Paro that way, and in that sense, he smashed that idol of Paro, at least privately, between him and Paro himself. However, what Rashi brings back, well, Rashi does mention it here, I should say, as well. He said, Rashi over here, I'm going to quote you the two Rashis. Rashi in Parsha Shmais, where Moshe Rabbeinu pours water on the ground and makes it blood in front of the Jewish people. So Rashi learns that that was a sample of the makos, right? Like one would instinctively understand that the blood there was like the blood here. And the reason why he was showing it to him was, you're going to see what I'm going to do, and this is the first example of what I'm going to do. Rashi there says, "Shebemaka rishayna nifra mi'elohehem," and the first plague, he punishes their god. Ki kshakodesh baruch hu nifra min humayis nifra mi eleheim tchila. When Hashem punishes the nations, first He visits the punishment upon their gods. Shayu avdim lenilus hamechaya isam. They used to worship the Nilus, which was their source of life, and here He turned it to blood. Rashi in Parshas Va'era says similarly, when it says that they turned to blood, He says, "Lefi she'ein gishamim yordim in Mitzrayim, rain doesn't fall in Mitzrayim, v'nilus oyle u'mashka es ha'aretz. The Nilus rises up and waters the earth, the land. So the Mitzrayim worship the Nile for that reason. Lefikach, therefore, hilka es yirasam, ve'acharkach hilka esam. That's why He afflicted the object of their worship before afflicting them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu nifra me'uma, nifra me'eleheim techila. So the Nile was the source of life of Egypt, was their God. And many times we've discussed how the Torah contrasts Eretz Mitzrayim and Eretz Yisrael. How does it contrast it? It contrasts it by the water sources. Mitzrayim, v'ishkisa b'raglecha kegan ha'yorek. Eretz, the land that you're coming to, is not like Eretz Mitzrayim. Eretz Mitzrayim, you water it with your feet. In other words, it's in your hands. You dig the irrigation ditches. The water comes from the river that flows through the land of Mitzrayim. That's what makes its fertility. But in Eretz Yisrael, it's the Eretz Asher Hashem Alekecha Dairish Esa. It's a land which Hashem is involved in. Hashem's eyes are on it from the beginning of the year to the end, because it's Limtar Hashamayim Tishtemayim. Eretz Yisrael doesn't have rivers that are plentiful. Eretz Yisrael is dependent on Mitar Hashamayim, on the rain from the heavens. So we have to look to the heavens. We consider rain to be something which is in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly. So when we speak about Eretz Yisrael as being in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly, as opposed to Shar Arotzeis, other lands, with Eretz Mitzrayim being the paradigm, the symbol, the perfect, the most extreme example, it's that it's not dependent on the heavens. It has other water sources. Water is necessary for life. Wherever your water comes from is, in a certain sense, your source of life. And so that was the way the Mitzrim were positioned. The Mitzrim saw the Nilus as their source of life, their source of sustenance, and in that sense, therefore, they worshipped the Nile. And when that river was turned to blood, it was a devastating, devastating blow for the Egyptians. It's the first blow which HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings. Maral explains, Ba'ofen Pashut Ma'od, in a very simple and straightforward way. He says that the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Nifra Me'elaheim Tchila is Ki Aved Zora Sivas Chet Shal Akum, Ki Kecham Hu Amesis Lechet. It is the Aved Zora, it's the power of that force, that God, that causes the nations to stray after it. The Ya'ar posed was a great power for the Egyptians. And so it makes sense that as the Gairim, as the cause, it should be the one to be afflicted. Let's just try to explain this a little bit more. You know, in yesterday's Parsha, the Ramban says something very esoteristic. Now, the truth is that I took this Ramban up with me to the pulpit yesterday. I was going to say it over as part of the drasha, but I just felt, you know, whatever, that I left it aside. It wasn't necessary, you know, essential, and it was not essential. We were talking yesterday a little bit about how in Eretz Yisrael is where we see the ongoing hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the life of the Jewish people. Right, in other places you may see the majesty of HaKadosh Baruch Hu when He created the world once upon a time. In Eretz Yisrael you see the ongoing hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in history. And the Ramban writes about this Be'arichus at great length. It's one of the most foundational Rambans about Eretz Yisrael and the Chumash. And it's, as everyone knows, the Ramban writes in many different places about the strength of Eretz Yisrael, and many times he cites it, what he writes in yesterday's Parsha, Parsha Sacharemos, where it speaks about the immorality that could possess the people, and the land will spit us out like it spit out the nation that came before. So the Maharal speaks about this dynamic, this life of Eretz Yisrael, this vitality of Eretz Yisrael, that it would spit somebody out or spit out a nation because of its immorality. And Maral speaks about the special quality of Eretz Yisrael, and he explains that the way Hashem made the world, Hashem did create systems. He empowered other things. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Sheishes Yimei Bereishis, the 6 days of creation. What was it for? It was to create a framework within which the world would run. And as the Maral explains it in more mystical terms which are found Mefurish, explicit in Psukim, like in Sefer Daniel. There's a Sar Malchus Paras, a Sar Malchus Yavan. There are ministering angels, forces, to whom Hashem delegates control of other nations, of other lands. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when it came to Eretz Yisrael, Hashem gave control over it to nothing else other than Himself. When it came to Klal Yisrael, Hashem gave over control of us to nothing else. Hashem takes care of us Himself. Other things may be subject to the Galgalim, to the signs, the stars, to whatever it is, but not the Jewish people, not the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael. And that's why Hashem puts the Jewish people ideally in Eretz Yisrael, in order to have the most direct involvement with our fate, and not leave us to the course of nature that He created once upon a time, but to deal with us real time, here and now. That's the principle which the Ramban writes there. And it's worthwhile, if you have never learned that Ramban, it's worthwhile to learn that Ramban inside. That's how he explains, Kol Hador Be'eretz Yisrael Kimi She'esh Lo Elohah, V'Kol Hador B'Chutz La'aretz Kimi She'ein Lo Elohah. Chazal famously say, somebody who lives in Eretz Yisrael, it's as if they have a God, and somebody who lives outside of Eretz Yisrael, it's as if they don't have a God. What does that mean? So the Ramban, the idea is, because if the person's in Eretz Yisrael, then he's in the place where Hashem's Hashgacha, Hashem's divine involvement and providence is immediate and direct. But if he leaves Eretz Yisrael, he's going to a place where to some degree Hashem has put other forces in charge. And Mitzrayim, with its Yor, with its river, represents the quintessence of a place where the power is not vested in the heavens, but the power is right here on this earth. The most divorced from the heavens, the most removed from Shamayim of any place else. That was Mitzrayim. So why was Mitzrayim such a arrogant, such a heretical culture? Why was it the land of sorcery that goes and does what it wants? It's makhish pamal yishamala. It defies the heavenly plans because of its power, because of its river, because of the fact that they never had to look humbly towards the heavens waiting for the rain to come. Explains the Maral, therefore, because that was the cause of their deviation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu first breaks that down. Right? It's, you know, in a certain sense, like, you're bombing someplace. You hit the power grid, right? You hit the government building, right? You know, anything which is a source of independence for that place, you first break. Here, the source of imagined independence of the Mitzrim was their God, their source of worship. The thing which they believe sustains them and makes them independent of Hashem Yisbarach, the first thing Hashem does is He breaks it, He smashes it, He destroys it, so that any illusion of independence from Hashem is destroyed. That's why the Maral explains this idea. It's pashut, but it's very real and very important, very true. You have to smash the illusions of where the power center is in order to be able to make everything clear. Questions, comments? So that's the first makkah. What about the other makkos? What's the system of the Eser makkos? So here, as I said to you before, the Maral really has a lot more to say about this than he's going to say here. Later in the Prakim Nun Vav, Nun Zayin, he's going to have a lot more to say about the specific system of the Makos. Here he speaks out one dimension. And he acknowledges this is just one dimension, it's not the whole story. And he brings the Midrashim, a slew of Midrashim, which explain that each of the Makos was Mida Keneged Mida, was measure for measure. The reason why there was a plague of dam on the river was because the Mitzrim wanted to stop Jewish women from being able to be Taivo, from being able to immerse themselves in the river, in the mikveh, because they wanted to stop the growth of the Jewish people, the population growth of the Jewish people. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu therefore said, Mida Keneged Mida, you didn't want to let us use the river, we're not going to let you use the river. Tzfardim. Why? Because
the Jewish women used the mikveh back in Mitzrayim?
Yes, that's the understanding. And look, even Rachel said Derech Noshim Li, you know, and she was therefore, you know, there was a certain instinctive, it's written, you know, separation that they had. Tzfardeya. Why? Because they told the Jewish people to bring for them different kinds of shkatzim or amasim, so therefore Hashem brought upon them the tzfardeya. There are other interpretations, you know, the noises. And he goes through all of the things. They made the Jewish people sweep the streets, so Hashem had their streets turn into lice, the dust became turned into lice. And so on and so forth and so on and so forth, each makkah as a mida keneged mida. So the Maral says, you have to understand, this is not the whole picture. I'll explain to you other dimensions later, because, tell me something, aren't there other things that the Mitzrim did besides these? Does this cover the whole gamut? Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't bring them, Einem Asker Shlei Dvorim Eilu Bevado Yom HaMitzrim HaYisrim LeYisrael Shei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mevelim Dafka Makos Eilu. He writes at the end of this paragraph, it wasn't only these things. So there are other dimensions, other factors. But the factor of Mida Keneged Mida, of measure for measure, is clearly a critical factor. And Maral explains, Pashut, in the realm of Dan Anoichi, it says, V'games HaGoya She'Yavaydu Dan Anoichi, the nation that they will be enslaved to, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Avram Avinu, I will punish them. And the nature of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's din is Mida Keneged Mida. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives people back according to what they gave. And of course, there's a very sharp and clear expression of this when it comes to Makos Mitzrayim. Why is that? Because what were the first words that Moshe Rabbeinu said when he came? What did Hashem tell Moshe Rabbeinu to tell Paro? Again, whether he said it right away, he didn't say it right away, some question. But what did he say? He said, tell him, my son, my firstborn is the Jewish people. If you don't let my firstborn child go, then I will smite your firstborn. Hineh anachi hareges bincha becherecha. Was so clearly presented as my becher, your becher. Mida keneged mida. And that was, of course, the statement that would encapsulate the makos. As Rashi says, he's telling him even his end game. But I'm going to give you everything up until makas becheros. Because it's all about mida keneged mida. When Yisro would come to the Jewish people, to Moshe Rabbeinu, he said, Atoya Dati, now I know how great Hashem is, ki badavar asher zadu aleihem. What they tried to do to the Jews was done to them. They threw the Jewish people into the sea, the boys, kol aben ayilat ayeret hashlichu. What happened to them? They were drowned in the sea at Kriyas Yamsuf. Mi chamaycha bo'elim Hashem, mida keneged mida. Mida keneged mida, measure for measure. That's the way Hashem does din. And the idea, of course, of mida keneged mida, at the very least, is to show that the punishment is an outgrowth of the crime. It's not just, you did this, so I'm angry, so I'm going to hit you. But the punishment is an outgrowth of the crime, of what you've done, the reality that has been created. That's true din. It's sort of like an integral punishment, a natural, integral punishment. So because Mida Keneged Mida is a fundamental measure, so if you look at every Makkah which they suffered, Sure, there are other reasons for the makos. We've discussed before, and he's going to explain more elaborately later, that the makos were demonstrative. They were to teach the Egyptian people and the Jewish people about the power of Hashem. So you have some of this kind and some of that kind, the different strata which the makos covered. Sure, that's all there. But it's not just a demonstration. It's a demonstration where somebody gets hurt in the demonstration. You understand? If HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to just show them something, so he could put it on a screen, he could make it a fireworks show that doesn't hurt anybody. But what happened here were demonstrations of Hashem's power as the Egyptians were being hurt. Why? Because it's dana naichi, because it's the punishment, and the punishment is mida keneged mida. That's what the theme which this medrash is saying, and v'day b'kach. That's pretty clear. That's pretty clear by itself. Questions, comments? No. Okay. You guys are very, very passive today. Now the last real section here in the perek, it was where the Maral looks. And this is one of the most challenging things I find in learning about the Makos, is these issues of patterns, trying to discern. Things are done differently in different circumstances, and trying to figure it out and understand the scheme is always a little bit tricky. What the Maral points out here is the following. What the Maral points out here is the following. When Moshe Rabbeinu first came to Paro, back in Parshas Shmos, so what did he say? He said to him, "Kehemar Hashem Elokei Yisrael." So said Hashem, the God of Israel. When he comes here at the time of the Makov Dam, he says, Hashem, Elokei ha'ivrim shlachani alach, Hashem, the God of the Hebrews sent me to you. And he says, Kleyam Hashem, so said Hashem, Zayis teida. When he comes for the Makkah of Tzvardeya, so what does it say? Kleyam Hashem, shalach es ami v'yavduni. Just says, so says Hashem. No additional titles. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the Makkah of Kinim, so of course he doesn't go at all to Paro, so there's no introduction, there's no name of Hashem used. The next one is the Makkah of Orev. There also, what does he say? Koy Omar Hashem. Shalach Ami V'Yavduni. Just plain Koy Omar Hashem. No additional titles. And then you have the Makkah of Orev. You go on to the Makkah of Shechin. Koyamar Hashem Elokei Ha'ivrim. Back to Elokei Ha'ivrim. You go on to the Makkah of Borod, and what does it say over there? Koyamar Hashem Elokei Ha'ivrim. So said Hashem, the God of the Ivrim. When you come to the Makkah of Arbe, Koyamar Hashem Elokei Ha'ivrim. So said Hashem, God of the Ivrim. Are you guys getting the hang of this? Right? When you come to the Makkah of Chayshech, so what does he say? Nothing. Remember, Chayshech is one of those Makkahs for which there is no warning. He just did it. You know, that's what what he says. And when it comes to the Makkahs B'chayres, again it says Kayamar Hashem Kachatzay Salayla Niyaseh B'sech. That's right. So when it comes to Tzvardeya and Orev, and then again Makas B'chayres, it just says Kayamar Hashem. Why? So the Maral first establishes Tzvardeya and Orev. Makas B'chayres is in a class of itself. He will come back to it at the end of the perek, but he first establishes it, and he says, "Ki makas neidel hem shemay Hashem." Through these makos, it became known to them the name of Hashem. The Makas Tzvardeya Nemar. So he says, "Look at the story. I'll show you why." Because when it came to the Makkah of Tzvardeya, what did Paray say? when the Tzvardeya, after the Tzvardeya came, he said, Moshe Rabbeinu said, "Leman teida ki ein kaHashem elokeinu." You'll know when I get rid of this Tzvardeya that there's nobody like Hashem. So therefore, Hashem's name became known. Similarly, when it came to the Makkah of Arav, he said as well the same thing, because he said, what does it say? Aviflesi bayem alus eres goshen leman teida ki ani Hashem. You'll know that I am Hashem. So these are the two makos where it says, so you will know that I am Hashem. So therefore, that's why it uses the Shem Hamiyuchad. So he says, well, why? What's so special about these two makos? So here the Maral says something very interesting. How did he demonstrate to Hashem, to them, the name of Hashem when it came to the makos of Tzvardeya? It wasn't in the Makkah, it wasn't in the plague. It was in the removal of the plague. Remember that in the Makkah of Tzvardeya, Paro got very upset. And he called Moshe and Aaron, and he said, pray to Hashem to get rid of these frogs. I can't take it. Frogs jumping everywhere. I can't take it. So Moshe says, pray to Hashem, get rid of them, and I'll let you go. So Moshe Rabbeinu said to Paro, make my day. He spoiled a lie. Go ahead, try to see, test me. When do you want me to get rid of them? When do you want me to get rid of these Tzvardeya? They're just going to remain in the Yor. And my Pirate says, I want you to get rid of them tomorrow. Are you testing him?
When was the day?
Because he was exactly, this was the Hispera lie. If he does it right away, no. Tomorrow, do it for a specific time. You're claiming. So he says, okay, that will be. That way you will know Ein Kashem Elokeinu. What's the idea that way you will know that Ein Kashem Elokeinu? Says the Maral, because L'kol Zman Ve'Eis L'chol Chefetz Tachas HaShemayim. Everything has a time allotted to it for everything beneath the sun. What is absolutely independent of time? Everything is right. Well, what do we call it? We're all Havli Hazman. We're all stuck within the dimension called time. Bereshis Bara Elokim. In the beginning, Hashem created. Right. So, what does the Goyin say? What does the Sfarnai say? He created time, a dimension within which things exist. And within that dimension of time, there are times that we can do, and there are times that we can't do. There are times when we have shlita, when we're powerful, and times when we're down. Hashoah misacheches, like we speak about that all the time, right? There are times when it's good and times when it's not. We even celebrate our Yomim Tovim to some degree in the realm of the seasons of time, understanding how our lives to some degree are defined by time. But Moshe Rabbeinu said, I'm functioning here with Hashem. And my demonstration to you of Hashem is that he can get rid of this whenever. Under normal functions, normal strength of people, I'm sorry, I'm off that day. My power isn't in existence that day. It depends what's going on. The ability to say whenever is the ultimate power, shows the power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'd like to explain that. And we're going to get to the second one in a minute. But we often refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as HaMokim. And Chazal say, why? Because everything exists within a certain place. We have the dimension of space, which is the obvious physical created dimension. Everything exists in a certain place. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in no place. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the world exists within Hashem. Ein ha'olam mekayma shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, el HaKadosh Baruch Hu mekayma shel olam. Hashem doesn't exist within the world, but the world exists within Hashem. There's also another, the name of Hashem is Havaya. Havaya is a contraction of Hoya Hoyveviye, was, is, and will be. And when we say that about Hashem, it's that Hashem does not exist within time. Was, is, and will be is all bundled together. That's the way many understand the answer to the question of Yediyah u'Bechira. How does Hashem know things now when we still have free choice to decide what they'll be later? Well, when we're living within the dimension of time, now comes before later. But Hashem doesn't live within the dimension of time. Hashem transcends time. And the name Havaya is like the name Hazman. Hashem doesn't exist within time, time exists within Him. Says the Maharal, because we exist within time, because all forces generally in the world will exist within time, we can never say whenever. If you say whenever, it's because you are above time, and that's the sign of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Maharal goes on and says, and the same thing was true by Orev, not about time, but about place. Because where did he say, you will see that I am Hashem? Because he says, you will see there will be a difference between Eretz Goshen and every place else. Between Eretz Goshen and every place else. I will distinguish between places. What's the idea, says the Maharal? Because it's true that Hashem separated Goshen from other things with other makos, but that was sort of like a natural phenomenon. It doesn't rain every place all the time. Right? It rains in certain places, doesn't rain in other places. Locusts pop up in Maryland. Do they pop up everywhere? Right? You understand that there are boundaries for certain things which are normal. This water turns to blood. Water turning to blood is never normal. But this water turns to blood, other waters don't turn to blood. That's okay. But wild animals rove. And the roving of wild animals is such that by nature, it knows no boundaries. But yet a boundary was established for them. That shows HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the ultimate arbiter of makom, of control of space. Says the Maharal, that's what these two makos were. That's why these two makos is as Hashem, not Hashem Alekei HaIvrim. Hashem Alekei HaIvrim, Hashem the God of the Hebrews is parochial. Hashem is the master of the universe. And Hashem becomes known as the master of the universe when His control over time and over space is manifest. His control over time is manifest in the frog saying when they would get rid of, whenever you want. And His control over space was manifest in the Makov Orev when He said that there will be no Orev in this place of Goshen. I want to just mention something, Agav, before we wrap up with a couple of notes that the Maharal is still going to touch upon over here, the idea of time. It says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the instruments of time, the sun, the moon, the stars, He created them to rule. Because we view ourselves as being under the control of time. The sun controls the daytime, the night is controlled by the moon. We consider ourselves under the stars of the zodiac and so on and so forth. They're given memshola. Rabbeinu Bachya says that the river was known as Ya'ir, as Nohar, because that's from the same term of light. It's the things that give light that have control. The river is called Ya'ir Nohar. It also has control. Remember, we were discussing before that the Egyptian people worshipped the river, right? Just like many worship the sun and the moon and the stars. Ya'ir Nohar, very fascinating, and I find that a very fascinating correlation. Okay, Maharal, however, has to tidy up this, and with this we'll finish. He says it's not. It's true that in the warnings, it's specifically by these that it says Hashem. But if you look more deeply, you'll see other things. So, for example, by Dam, Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu said, "Koyamar Hashem, v'zois teida ki ani Hashem." With this, you will know that I am Hashem. So again, a demonstration of Hashem. It's why is there a demonstration of Hashem by Dam? It's the theories which he said before don't apply. Says the Maharal, there's something special about Dam. As we say in the Haggadah, uvemayfsim ze hadam. Why is dam special? Says the Maral, because every other makkah is not unheard of. It's only unheard of in its intensity. Frogs, there are frogs. Just the intensity of such a plague of frogs is unheard of. Kinim, lice, heard of plenty. The intensity, right? The timing, right? All right, wild animals, right? It's a beautiful day. Go to the zoo. Get the keys, right? There's your plague of Arif. Right? The dever, that animals get hit by a plague, right? And fall happens, you know, happens. Mad cow disease, right? Shchin boils. Again, the intensity is certainly dramatic and miraculous. Borod, hail, arbe, locust, all these things happen. Darkness happens. Yes, the intensification of the darkness. But that water turns to blood? Never happens. Maral later in Perek Nun Vav, when again he writes more detail about the Makos, he says that's B'mayfsim Zeh Hadam, because he explains the difference between Isis and Mayfsim is 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 the actor, and Mayfis is what is acted upon, the object. Right? Is is a demonstration of the power of the actor. So the Isis are the Mata, because the stick was the actor, the stick was used to accomplish all of these things. Ubimaifsim, a maifis is look at the object, look what was done. Not look at the actor, look at what was done. And what was done when it came to the dam was dramatically different than with everything else. Because again, with everything else, it was just exaggerating an existing natural phenomenon. When it came to turning water into blood, it was a radically different thing. And so explains Maral. That's why it says, "B'zayis tedaki ani Hashem," by the makah of dam, as well. And he explains, even though it starts off and says "Kayam Hashem alekei ha'ivrim," it was a general introduction. It wasn't an introduction to the makah of dam. He says, "By borod," it says, "When I go out of the city, I'll raise my hands. The thunder will stop. You'll know that ki la'Hashem ha'oretz, that the land belongs to Hashem." And there he says, because again it's the same phenomenon. Moshe Rabbeinu would do it when he would want to do it. Now, it was different than by Tzfardeya, because by Tzfardeya, Moshe Rabbeinu said to Paro, "You tell me when you want it, and I will do it." So therefore it was more of a demonstration. Whereas over here, Moshe Rabbeinu just went out and did it on by himself. So therefore, when he did it, it says Kila Hashem, but not the same in advance. But again, borrowing on the same principle. And finally, by Makas B'chayres, it says Koyam Hashem, because there also, you know, the absolute distinction of Makas B'chayres, which is what, again, the name Pesach comes from, skipping between this one and that one, the absolute perfection of distinction is the hallmark of Hashem. Anything which is subject to any of the shluchim, any of the agents, is wholesale. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is precise. With HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's no such thing. When it's Hashem directly, the idea of distinction, the idea of somebody getting swept up along with somebody else doesn't exist. It's always with perfect distinction. So this is the way the Maral explains. So again, comprehensively, and this is such a hard avoda in the parsha of the Makos, because there's so many subtleties in pattern. The subtlety which he's dealing with here, again in review, is where it just uses the name of Hashem purely by itself, and he says there it is a demonstration of a unique power of Hashem beyond the others of Hashem Elokei HaIvrim, and he's explained first the phenomenon as it is found most glaringly by Tzfardeya and by Orai, because here it shows the command of Hashem over time, and here the command of Hashem over space. And then he's brought similar indications from other places where it's found not as glaring, but nevertheless significantly as well. With Hashem, we will continue next time with Perek Amud Gimel. Good morning.
Doesn't the Lord have that uniqueness also? Not just in abundance, but because he had the fire inside?
The fire and the thing, yes. That is also unique, and the Maral will talk about it later, but he doesn't equate it here. He doesn't equate it to the Dan. It doesn't equate it to the Dan. But we'll have to see why. We'll have to see why it doesn't deserve to be equated to the Dan. Not Pashut.
Right.
Welcome back, Avram.